Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
Now, straight from the headlines, we bring you the latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery on the East County Magazine Show, KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at the San Diego Performance Academy. And my guest today is Lori Saldana, the past chair of the San Diego Sierra Club and former assemblywoman. Lori, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Now, the UT San Diego broke a story this week indicating that the National Sierra Club Board is considering suspending the local Sierra Club Board. Can you tell us what the ramifications of that would be for the local chapter?
Well, what this would do is take away the voices of the local members who elected people to represent them at the San Diego board level to determine their finances and operations. And if the national board steps in, and they've done this, but in only a handful of cases in recent years, it would really take away the local elected voices of people who have a certain vision for San Diego.
Why would the national chapter want to do that? What's really behind this, Lori?
Well, I was contacted almost 4 years ago by people who were concerned about changes taking place within the chapter. And what I was hearing is that they were laying off experienced staff who were working on conservation and volunteer coordination efforts and replacing them with basically one person who was doing nothing except raising money. And they also wanted to hire an attorney. And that concerned many of us. Using a lawsuit to block a project is always the last resort. Mm-hmm. The way the Sierra Club has been effective is by having good policy and working with elected officials, using volunteers to set conservation policy at the local level. When they laid off the conservation director and they laid off the volunteer coordinator, those essential elements disappeared.
I've heard that they don't have a water committee anymore. I know we've had people say, why isn't the Sierra Club speaking out about things like the draining of Lake Moreno or big energy projects that are draining the aquifers, the groundwater in East County?
The Conservation Committee has subcommittees on water, energy, and other projects, and it really has suffered by not having a full-time staffer to support them on conservation work. Again, when we lost a conservation and volunteer staff position, we lost the ability to support volunteers to do those conservation activities that you're describing.
So to be clear, this is not about any wrongdoing by the local board?
No. It's really been a different philosophy in how the chapter proceeds. Do you want it to be all about one employee focused on raising money to the extent of anything else?
And how successful, by the way, has that money raising been?
Compared to other chapters, when I've looked at comparisons in a national annual report that came out in October, even though we have a full-time fundraising position, which is unusual, most chapters don't even have a full-time fundraiser. They have part-time fundraisers or the volunteers do the fundraising. When you look at the results, it's not impressive. We are not exceeding the performance of other chapters. Yeah. So it's a real concern why we support this person.
How is membership doing in its heyday? Sierra Club had something like 15 or 16,000 members or so, as I recall.
Membership is on the decline, and that was one of the evaluations that I noticed when I took over. I was appointed as chapter chair in December of 2012. I started looking at the performances of the one staff person remaining, and they were not exceeding or even meeting their performance goals.
Now, the national chapter has been exerting its influence rather heavy-handedly on a number of things. I've been told by a number of people that they have also tried to muzzle or effectively muzzled local chapters around the nation because obviously Sierra Club is very concerned about climate change and global warming. So they've kind of put blinders on regarding the negative impacts of certain industrial scale wind and even industrial solar projects, and basically forbidden local chapters to take positions against these things or raising concerns about negative impacts of them. Do you think that type of policy is hurting membership? I mean, maybe if they would allow the local clubs to speak out on some of these issues, they'd get more members from people that are being negatively impacted by those projects.
Well, the San Diego chapter was established in the 1940s to work on preserving the Torrey Pines trees, which are unique to San Diego, mm-hmm. to work on protecting open spaces. San Diego has many unique qualities that other areas of the country really can't appreciate. We mm-hmm. have the most diverse, the most number of species True. Of any region in the country. I'm talking about plants, animals, insects, birds. So San Diego has a long history of effective conservation work and partnering with people in the backcountry. So as you mentioned, these national policies supporting industrial scale solar and wind, those are often detrimental to those communities that want to maintain a certain quality of life.
Right.
And so where San Diego has tried to say we don't want the Sunrise Power Link transmission lines. They're a fire hazard. They're a blight on the yeah. sight lines.
Yeah, the local SERCOP chapter.
The local chapter
took a position against power
opposed
link.
That. The national board was on record of being, I believe, neutral. This predates my return. Mm-hmm. I returned a little over a year
yeah.
ago. But you're right. The national board and the local board have been at disagreement points on some of these policy issues.
What is the answer here?
Well, I believe the answer is to have national members of the board come to San Diego and listen directly to the membership here. We're the fifth oldest chapter in the country. We historically have achieved some really great results. We're one of the few chapters that does maintain an office. Mm-hmm. But the problem is the office isn't staffed by the people we need to be an effective conservation volunteer organization. We need a change in employees. We need a change in how we communicate locally to the national board. I talked to Dave Scott this morning, the national board president. I expressed my concern that all of this was taking place in a real vacuum of back and forth communication. And he sounds like he's not willing to send people to San Diego to hear people's direct comments.
Is he the only person who can make that decision, Lori?
It would be a vote of the board, but he's the chairman of the board. So obviously he sets the agenda and he has tremendous power over what does or doesn't get sent out or communicated to the other board members.
Interesting. So there's no way to reach out and contact board members individually?
Well, I wanted to start. I've talked with Dave Scott in the past about my concerns over issues, and I decided to reach out to him directly and express my concern over the letter. The other thing was the timing of the letter. Many of us have known this was in the works for months, and yet they postponed it until after the end of the year because they wanted people to donate and make charitable contributions
yeah,
to the chapter before the end of the year.
And the decision itself is supposed to be made by early February, I understand?
They will have another board meeting in early February. So it's a very short time frame that they're moving yeah. this ahead. We have over 10,000 members. Most of them are only now hearing about these problems. And to put it on such a short timeline and say we'll do a conference call or a teleconference, you know, even the US EPA finally, at the end of a review, sends a person directly to a community to hear directly from the people that will be impacted. You would think the Sierra Club could do at least this, as well as the federal government, in reaching out and hearing people and their concerns.
Right. They've been effective on many issues like that over the years. Lori, what can listeners, Sierra Club members, or even lapsed members or non-members do to try to voice their concerns and to bring about a hearing here in San Diego on these issues?
If they receive the letter, then respond the ways that are offered in the letter via email or the conference call. But let them know they'd like to have more information directly presented to them mm-hmm. and have people come to San Diego and talk directly. The number for the national office in San Francisco is 415-977-5500. That's the general switchboard.
So anybody can call that, even if you're not currently a Sierra Club member?
Correct. You can call that number, ask to go to the board liaison, the person who communicates directly with the national board, and they will communicate to them and let them know that they're getting these calls from people who are concerned about what's going on.
Very good. Well, Lori, I want to thank you very much for joining us here today on the East County Magazine show on KNSJ on this very important issue.
Thank you for the opportunity.
This is Julian Rudd Falls with a Crime Beat Report. El Cajon police are asking for your help to identify a suspect who viciously assaulted the owner of Hamlin Jewelers with the blunt end of a hatchet earlier this week. Police have released surveillance photos of the suspect, which are posted on our website at www.eastcountymagazine.org or at the El Cajon police website. He's wanted for attempted murder and armed robbery. The suspect apparently entered the business at 2234 Fletcher Parkway, pretending that he wanted to buy merchandise. After assaulting and robbing the owner, the suspect fled to a waiting Toyota 4Runner with the possible partial license of 4XU245. Witnesses said it may have been silver or tan in color and was driven by an unidentified accomplice. The victim remains hospitalized in stable condition with numerous injuries sustained in the attack, including head injuries. The assailant was described as a thin man in his 20s with a light beard. He was wearing dark-colored pants and a black shirt. Lieutenant Frank LaHaye said the suspect is armed and dangerous. If you have information regarding the identity of the suspect or the suspect vehicle, contact the El Cajon Police Department at 619-579-3311. People with information on the identity of a suspect in this case may also qualify for a $1,000 reward by calling Crime Stoppers Anonymous tip line at 888-580-TIPS.
Are there large black wildcats prowling around East County's backcountry? East County Magazine has received eyewitness reports from many people who say that they've seen large black wildcats here, some the size of mountain lions, in our region. So far, nobody's captured photos of the animals, but the growing number of sightings from seemingly credible sources, including an East County Magazine reporter, raises some intriguing questions. Are these cats escaped exotic pets? Or could black jaguars, believed extinct in California, or the smaller jaguarundis, have found their way back into our region? Both jaguars and jaguarundis are critically endangered in the U.S., and they are protected by federal law. If these rare cats are regaining a toehold in our area, is anything being done to protect them from being shot by ranchers, law enforcement, or wildlife officials? Southwestern College literature professor Dan Moody told East County Magazine that his mother, Dee Moody, saw a jet-black large cat that weighed at least 60 pounds walk across an open field right behind her Spring Valley house on January 4th in broad daylight. Dee Moody, a retired high school teacher, told us it was definitely a cat, long and sleek. She said the big cat was at least as big as her 70-pound German Shepherd dog. She described the large cat as black and shiny, with a tail at least half as long as its body. 2 months earlier, her neighbor, Manuel Domagsang, a retired U.S. Navy chief, says he heard chickens making noise. He told us he found a big black cat inside the coop. The cat killed one chicken that night. Around 5 a.m. the next morning, he checked the coop and found the black cat was inside and had killed his remaining four chickens. The big cat leaped over a fence right in front of him, he told us. Dan Moody said a sheriff's deputy came with a rifle after the chicken killings and speculated that the animal might be an illegal juvenile pet black panther that has escaped from someone's home. Now, the problem with that is that the term black panther typically refers to a black leopard or a black jaguar, but there's no such species as a black panther. However, about 6% of jaguars are black, and jaguars are native to northern Mexico, Arizona, and Texas. The deputy advised calling California Fish and Game and suggested the animal could be shot. However, it has not been found. On Christmas Day, another strange thing happened. According to Dan Moody, a retired Southwestern College professor came across two dead coyotes at the end of her cul-de-sac on the eastern side of Dictionary Hill in Spring Valley, and their throats had been slashed. Now, there's not a lot of animals out there that can kill a coyote, and a big cat is certainly one of them. East County Magazine reporter Ariel Brook, who is also a teacher, says she saw a large black cat run across a roadway in Dearhorn Valley near Jamul in front of her vehicle about a year ago. Asked how large it was, she extended her arms full width and said it looked like a black mountain lion and had a long tail. Now, there have been anecdotal reports of black mountain lions, or pumas, across the United States, but there has never been a single case of that documented. There have been several cases of black bobcats documented, including one that was killed and positively identified. But our local black cat sightings all have long tails, ruling out the black bobcat theory here. Back in February of 2012, we reported that a librarian's son in Hakumba had reported seeing what he described as a black panther crossing Old Highway 80 in Hakumba. This was one of several recent sightings of the same or similar animal, area residents of Hakumba and Boulevard told East County Magazine back then. This week, we asked Howard Cook, a member of the Hakumba sponsor group, about black cat sightings in his area. Oh, yes, he said, adding that there have been regular sightings of not only a large black cat, but also several sightings in recent years of golden black spotted jaguars at the recently refilled Lake Hakumba, just a few hundred yards from the Mexican border fence, which does have a gap just east of Hakumba for wildlife to cross the international border. Now, as for the black cat, Cook stated, we think it's a black jaguar from Mexico. Cook voiced concerns that big energy projects threaten to drain local aquifers, or groundwater, and dry up these water sources for wildlife such as the large cats in his area. Jaguars are large, powerful animals, typically 125 to 250 pounds, sometimes even bigger than a mountain lion when fully grown. Black jaguars range from virtually all black to some that have spots faintly visible. Jaguars once roamed through California, but are believed to be extinct here. Another explanation for the local sightings is the jaguarundi, also found in Mexico, but substantially smaller than a mountain lion at about 3 feet long. While most jaguarundis are tan or brown, some are melanistic or dark in hue, ranging from gray to black. Unlike jaguars and mountain lions, which are nocturnal, jaguarundis tend to hunt during daylight hours. Some people have described jaguarundis as having a weasel-like appearance due to their narrow heads and small ears. Now, East County Magazine isn't the only news outlet to report large black cat sightings in our region. In December 2013, UT San Diego reported that a couple near Miramar Reservoir claimed to have seen a large grayish-black cat that they described as about 4 to 4.5 feet long, heavier than a German shepherd. It was walking and sniffing like a dog would sniff, said the witness, who claims he saw the large cat on a rocky dirt lot before it vanished into brush on a steep hill facing the reservoir. In December 2011, the San Diego Reader reported that Warren Storm Thunder, a resident of Hapatul Valley south of Alpine, claims he saw a jaguarundi. He had the characteristic raked stance, longer back legs, shorter front legs. He was 25 feet away in the tall grass of the meadow, Storm Thunder told the Reader. A resident of Aguanga, which is near Warner Springs, posted on a blog site that in her rural area she heard dogs going ballistic in 2012 and went outside to see a startling sight on a rocky mountain outside. The cat was on a huge boulder. I have directly in the back of my house, she said, adding that it was near a barn where she had livestock stabled. She added it was about the length of a pit bull, black with glistening circles of gray and round ears. The head was small for the body, but had a long tail that dragged when the cat was creeping up the rocks. She added, living at the base of the Cahuilla Mountain, many people have seen the same sort of cat. After East County Magazine published a story on the black cats on January 22nd, a reader posted that he knows someone who saw a large black cat in a tree in Valley Center. The wide geographic range of places where big black cats have been seen locally raises the possibility that these are not all the same animal and that we could have a population of wild black jaguars or some similar species. Numerous black cat sightings have also been reported in Northern California over the past several decades in many different locations. The San Diego Sheriff's Department responded to our inquiry about its policies for handling calls about large cats, black or otherwise. They referred us to Captain Scotty Barondo at the Sheriff's San Marcos substation. Our policy is if we respond to any animal, especially wild animals, we will call animal control or fish and game because they are experts and we will only engage the animal if there is an immediate threat to human life, Captain Nibarondo said. Fish and game officials carry tranquilizer dart guns and can potentially relocate an animal in a problem area, but often there's not adequate staffing to respond to large animal sightings promptly. Sergeant Nibarondo said that if an animal poses an imminent life-threatening situation, even an endangered status may not protect it. Moreover, an animal that destroys livestock, including chickens, can be killed by authorities. However, it is illegal for any individual to kill a jaguar, jaguarundi, or mountain lion, since all are protected in California. In late December, a mountain lion sighting in urban Lemon Grove prompted a sheriff press release urging the public to call and report additional sightings. Asked how deputies would respond to such a call, a deputy at the Lemon Grove substation told East County Magazine's editor that the lion would probably be shot. San Diego has been the site of controversy recently after Voice of San Diego published a series called San Diego's Wildlife Killers, exposing how a secretive federal agency, Wildlife Services, a division of the U.S. Department of Agriculture, has killed 18,700 animals countywide, ranging from skunks to mountain lions. A Sacramento Bee investigation found that this same agency killed, quote, illegally, indiscriminately, and inhumanely, threatening entire ecosystems. We contacted the San Bernardino Sheriff's Department, which routinely handles calls reporting not only mountain lions, but also bears. And by the way, you may be surprised to learn that East County has recently had a handful of black bear sightings, too, including one confirmed on Border Patrol infrared night vision video. Sergeant Anthony Padfield at the San Bernardino Sheriff's Department told us that his department handles calls of big cats or bear sightings in this manner. Our procedure would be to contact Fish and Game and have them respond to the location. If our deputies are dispatched, we're just there to protect the citizens, he said. He added that wild animals, even large predators, are generally left alone there unless there's an imminent danger, such as going into somebody's house. Most of the time, with noise and cars, they will go back into the wooded areas or the mountains or hillsides, he noted. Would we just arrive on scene and shoot a bear or a mountain lion just because it's roaming around? No, we wouldn't, he confirmed. Rather than calling law enforcement or wildlife officials if you see a big cat, black or otherwise, you might consider taking alternative steps to cohabitate peacefully with our wildlife. You can protect chickens from large wild cats by securing wire mesh around the coop, have a sturdy roof, and high fencing. Using guard dogs to protect cattle or sheep can reduce predation by 93%. It's a good idea to keep pets indoors at night and don't allow small children to play outdoors unattended in rural areas where mountain lions, coyotes, or other large predators may be present. When walking or hiking in areas frequented by big cats, you can carry a whistle, hiking stick, or even pepper spray for protection. But fortunately, attacks by mountain lions and jaguars against humans are very rare. Smaller jaguarundis are not known to pose any threats to people. East County Magazine is very interested in hearing from other area residents who have seen a large black wildcat. We are especially seeking photos and videos to document the presence of these animals, so if you have a photo or video, please send it to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We hope to identify what species of wildcats are prowling around our backcountry and whether jaguars, like this one, have returned to their historic range here in San Diego County. Reporting for East County Magazine and KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Mark Gavitt reporting on the 2014 State of the State Address. During the State of the State Address, Governor Jerry Brown emphasized that the state's improving economic outlook while also pledging to pay down our debts and remember the lessons of history. He also laid out a long-term water plan for the state, renewed calls for water conservation amid a drought declaration, and vowed to continue reforming school funding and battling climate change. Bright spots are the signs of economic recovery. What a comeback it is, the governor declared. 1 million new jobs since 2010, a budgetary surplus in the billions, and a minimum wage rising to $10 an hour. The governor thanked voters for passing Proposition 25 to enable a simple majority in the legislature to pass a budget, ending gridlock. He also praised voters for passing Proposition 30, temporary tax increases that help fund education. But he warned, "We are not out of the woods, and we certainly are not out of the drought. Life is uncertainty. The climate is changing, not for the better. And the business cycle and the stock market are historically volatile." He added that long-term liabilities are enormous and growing, citing examples of over $100 billion in pensions owed to state workers, as well as billions more to cover retiree health care, maintain roads, and account for future risks such as natural disasters and uncertain costs of the Affordable Care Act. Citing advice Joseph gave to the Pharaoh in Genesis, he called for a rainy day fund locked into the Constitution. "Put away your surplus during the years of great plenty, so you will be ready for the lean years which are sure to follow," he said, also pledging to pay down the state's debts. He praised enactment of the local control funding formula last year, aimed at helping districts with low-income families and those whose first language is not English. "Those with less are going to receive more, and that is good for all of us," the governor stated. He also called for more control of education funding at the local level. To address the drought, the governor said he has convened an interagency drought task force. "We need everyone in every part of the state to conserve water," he reiterated. "We need regulators to rebalance water rules and enable voluntary transfers of water, and we must prepare for forest fires." He added that water recycling, expanded storage, and serious groundwater management must all be part of the mix, along with investments in safe drinking water, wetlands, and watershed restoration. The governor noted that vehicles use over 14 billions of gasoline each year in California, contributing to greenhouse gases. He called for reducing oil consumption and working towards breakthrough technologies. He praised the expansion of healthcare coverage to millions who lacked it before, adding that the state created a tax credit to help innovators. California has six of America's 12 top-performing metropolitan areas in biotechnology, including San Diego. Governor Brown wants to see California pioneer new fields of precision medicine using genomics, medical devices, computer sciences, and other fields. California is a leader in so many ways, he concluded. But the dangers and difficulties we face can never be taken lightly. We still have too many struggling families, too much debt, and too many unknowns when it comes to our climate. Overcoming these challenges will test our vision, our discipline, and our ability to persevere. But overcome them we will, and as we do, we will build for the future, not steal from it. The governor's State of the State address drew prompt reactions from local legislators. Assemblyman Brian Jones from Santee, who chairs the Assembly Republican Caucus, had this to say. In spite of continuous attempts by Republicans over the years to pay down our wall of debt and create a rainy day fund, Democrats continue to take money from the people and spend every dollar and then some. While Jones faults Democrats for the state's fiscal woes in recent years, Governor Brown faulted a lethal combination of national recessions, improvident tax cuts, and too much spending for the problems, but noted that the budget is now balanced with a Democratic-controlled legislator. Jones also noted that California has dropped from the 6th to 9th largest economy in the world and faulted what he called failed green energy policies, among other criticisms. State Senator Marty Block, a Democrat from San Diego, noted that the governor celebrated creation of a million jobs, but Senator Block added, "Unfortunately, a skills gap exists that keeps many of these jobs vacant." While the governor addressed the drought, Block observed, "We face more than one kind of drought, like crops in California's Central Valley. Like crops in California's Central Valley, the supply of highly sought-after, highly skilled workers has dried up in many parts of the state." Senator Block offered this solution. "We must rein resources on workforce development and community college programs that could end the drought of highly skilled workers threatening California's future. Such rein is necessary for the growth of our economy."
This is a public service announcement from East County Magazine. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts provide important information about much more than wildfires. In these winter months, you can receive free alerts via email or Twitter on your mobile phone about emergencies such as flash floods, road closures, heavy snow, and other severe weather alerts, as well as wildfires, traffic reports, and more. You can sign up for this free public service at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Indians. The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, your network for social justice.
This is Mark Gavitt reporting for East County Magazine and KNSJ on a recent tragedy in El Cajon. El Cajon police have arrested Hector Hoyt, an SDG&E worker who is accused of fleeing the scene after striking a 54-year-old man crossing Hamasha Road on January 6th. Hoyt was driving his SDG&E utility truck at the time. SDG&E has indicated that Hoyt is no longer an employee and that he was not using the vehicle for company business at the time of the fatal crash. The victim, Robert Fisher, was left lying in the street in the darkness, where he was then struck by a second vehicle and died at the scene. The second driver called 911 and cooperated with the police. ECM News partner 10 News reports that Fisher was a transient. Hoyt was arrested while on his way home. Hoyt had previously been convicted of driving under the influence in 2005, according to 10 News. The prior incident raises questions about the adequacy of background checks conducted by SDG&E for its hiring.
If you need help with your taxes, the AARP Tax Aid Program can help. They're offering free tax preparation and e-filing for senior citizens, low-income residents, and others in need in the East County area. Tax sites will be open the week of February 3rd and continue until April 15th. The AARP Tax Aid Program will be available at the following locations: the El Cajon Library, College Avenue Senior Center, Alpine Senior Center, La Mesa Adult Enrichment Center, and Edgemoor Hospital. Two locations that have offered this service in the past, Lemon Grove Senior Center and the Salvation Army, will not be open this year. Past clients at these two sites are welcome to make an appointment at any of the other locations.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with today's Green Scene Report. Soitec Solar is hosting a community workshop to provide information on its Goliath-scale solar projects proposed in Boulevard. The projects include thousands of solar panels, each 30 feet tall, in this rural area. The workshop will be held on Wednesday, January 29th, at the Manzanita Diner on Old Highway 80 from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. To RSVP or get additional information, you can contact Karen Hutchins at Soitec at 619-236-0227. According to Soitec, project representatives and technical experts will be available to answer questions about the draft environmental impact report for Soitec solar power developments. The draft EIR is available for public review at the Campo and Hakumba County Libraries, or you can find a link online at eastcountymagazine.org. Now, curiously, Soitec failed to extend an invitation to the chair of the Boulevard Planning Group, Donna Tisdale, who has raised serious concerns over the impacts of the project on her community and the environment. The gaffe prompted Tisdale to remind Soitec that she should have received an invitation, adding in her RSVP, "You do know your projects are in Boulevard, not Hakumba, right?"
Local winery owners voice outspoken concerns about proposed amendments to the county's tiered winery ordinance during a workshop held by the county on January 17th. Vintners and concerned citizens who spoke said the amendments would curtail some of their current operating procedures. These issues include restrictions on wine made from grapes grown elsewhere, requirements for commercial building permitting, compliance with Zoning and American with Disabilities Act, or ADA, requirements, restrictions on amplified sound and food service. According to County Planning Manager Joseph Ferraci, the proposed amendment served to only clarify the existing ordinance. "It was never our intent to make more restrictions or undermine our local winery businesses," he said. "There have been a lot of questions on implementation over the 2 years on issues that keep coming up, so our intention was to clarify the existing ordinance to avoid the confusion." However, Terry Kearns, president of Ramona Ranch Winery and editor of Ramona Valley Wine Region magazine, said the amendments, if passed, would be the most restrictive grape-growing, farming, and winemaking ordinance in California. Local winemakers expressed unanimous opinions that the proposed amendments would place burdensome restrictions on local wineries, leading to the destruction of the county's burgeoning winemaking industry. The proposed amendments to the ordinance can be found on the county website or in our online article at eastcountymagazine.org. Reporting for East County Magazine and KNSJ, this is Julian Redfalls.
This is Mark Gavitt reporting for East County Magazine and KNSJ on the high poverty rates in portions of East County. The San Diego Association of Governments has released a new report on poverty. Included in the report are 5-year estimates of poverty in our region, based on the American Community Survey in 2011. El Cajon has by far the highest poverty rate in San Diego County, with 32% of individuals living below the poverty level and 49% living within 200% of the federal poverty level. National City has the next highest level, a full 10 points lower at 22% living in poverty. Among East County cities, Lemon Grove has 18% of its citizens living below the poverty level, followed by La Mesa at 12% and Santee at just 8%. The county average overall is 13% below the poverty level and 30% within 200% of the poverty level. Nationally, about 14% of people are living in poverty. Unincorporated communities are not calculated separately, so we don't know what the poverty levels are in rural communities such as Alpine, Campo, Julian, or Hakumba. Despite these figures, the majority of those in poverty have not received any public assistance in the last year in our region. Of families living in poverty in San Diego County, 28% said that they had received supplemental security income and/or cash public assistance in the past year, but only 4% of households had received supplemental nutrition assistance program benefits or food stamps locally. The Federal Census Bureau's definition of poverty varies based on age and family size, but was $11,945 a year in 2012 for a single person under the age of 65.
Now it's time for the East County Magazine Trivia Quiz. Yeah! Welcome to another edition of the East County Magazine Trivia Quiz. And my guests today are Raina, Wes, and Jerry. Let's give them all a big hand.
Yay!
Okay, are you guys ready?
Yes.
Yeah.
All right.
Sure are.
Cool. Okay, our first question is, on Christmas Day, a shopper at the Food for Less in Lemon Grove spotted something unusual in a vacant lot outside and called the sheriff. What was it?
A rattlesnake.
A goat?
Nope.
The Easter Bunny?
Nope. No. Sounds like you guys need some choices. Here's some multiple choices. Was it a runaway reindeer, a fugitive on the FBI most wanted list, a missing person, or a mountain lion?
A mountain lion.
Right. A very lost mountain lion in Lemon Grove. Okay. Next question. Health officials are concerned over a new study that shows that something has doubled in popularity among local high school students. What is it?
Kissing.
Maybe, but...
Skipping school?
Skipping school.
Yeah, I don't even know what high school students like.
All kinds of things, but how about some choices? Was it texting while driving, getting tattoos, extreme sports, or hookah smoking?
Hookah smoking.
Yeah.
That's right. You got
really?
It. Really? You got it. There you go.
Now, can you explain hookah smoking?
I forgot. Let's see. Next up. What kind of controversial project just broke ground in Hamul?
Is it something to do with the spas over there?
Nope, not a spa.
Something with birds?
Nope, not birds.
I don't know. Some kind of, don't even know.
Well, how about a condo complex, a Walmart supercenter,
Walmart,
a casino, or a drag racing track?
Drag racing track.
No, you're all
casino.
Wrong.
It's a casino. That's right.
Hamul Indian Village.
We should have known that. Yeah.
Don't they already have a couple of those out there?
Huh?
There's already some out there, right?
Well, not Hamul yet.
Okay.
But there's plenty of them everywhere else, but not there. Not there. Okay, how about... What's the occupation of the person who founded the Borrego Springs Film Festival?
A movie director.
Good guess, but it's wrong.
Actually, a carpenter.
A carpenter. Nope. Is it? Movie star was one of our guesses. We now know that's wrong. Was it the Chamber of Commerce, a retired state park ranger, or a high school student?
A high school student.
Park ranger.
Park ranger. Oh, we got two of them right. Wes and Jerry.
Oh, that one, yeah.
You both got it. All right. Ecos Energy is a developer that wants to build the Calico Ranch Solar Project in Winola near Julian. And they told a little fib to the county planners. They said the project site was on a vacant lot. What's really on that lot?
A bunch of old growth oak trees.
You got it.
Oh.
Old growth oak trees and also protected manzanita trees and native grasses.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Good thing someone actually went out and checked on that one.
Yes.
Okay. Couple more questions. What does the Takeda company want to put 2,000 of along the San Diego River in Santee? 2,000 of what?
Lifeboats?
Nope, not lifeboats.
Payphones.
Payphones. Is it, do you have a guess, Wes?
No, I don't.
Is it condominiums, trees, solar panels, or birdhouses?
Solar panels.
I'm hoping it's birdhouses.
Nope. Actually, it's trees. They're having their employees come out
all right.
To plant 2,000 trees along the river to offset completely the amount of paper that their company uses. Isn't that a cool thing?
That is nice.
Yeah.
It's nice to hear good news.
It is, isn't it? Okay.
So I thought it was a tequila company. So.
Tequila. Actually, a pharmaceutical company.
I don't know.
Biotech. A young woman from Crest recently won something major. What was it?
Lottery?
Nope, that was one of my guesses, but no.
Nobel Prize?
Not a Nobel Prize.
Pulitzer Prize.
Well, you guys are guessing all my fake-out answers. There's two left, though. Was it a spot on the U.S. Olympic team or the Miss California USA pageant?
Miss California USA.
You got it.
Yay.
Yes, she did. She's a student at San Diego State and a resident of Crest out here in the Alcon area.
Hmm.
Okay, two more questions. What kind of new recreational facility opened in Alpine late last year?
River rafting? Shooting?
Nope. Shooting range? I think we have a lot of those up there already, probably.
I don't know. Water slide?
That would be cool, wouldn't it? That would be more fun.
Keep people cool out there.
Well, our choices are a skateboard park, a rodeo arena, a skydiving school, or a rock climbing.
Skydiving school.
Nope.
Oh. Must be rock climbing then.
Nope.
Rodeo. Rodeo.
Nope. Skateboard park. Skateboard park.
Wow. We're going to get to that eventually.
Okay.
They should have all the other stuff anyway.
Yeah, yeah. Well, these are pretty obscure. Like I said, you guys just have to read East County Magazine more and you'll find all this stuff. Governor Brown pardoned a local woman on Christmas Eve who had been convicted of theft, drugs, and firearms charges over 20 years ago before she turned her life around. What career did she choose and how did she gain fame and respect?
Firefighter.
Wes got it right.
Oh.
She
rescued some people, I think.
She did. She saved the life of a teenager during the Harris wildfire, and she actually suffered burns and injuries badly enough that it ended her firefighting career, but she's gone on to get married, have kids, and be a spokesman for, you know, burn victims and really turned her life around. So congratulations to her and to all of you. And thank you for joining us
on the East
County Magazine.
Yay.
This is East County Magazine's Tribal Beat, bringing you news for and about our region's Native American communities.
This is Nori Robbins, guest hosting today's Tribal Beat. Today we have visiting with us Brian Van Wansiel. He lives in Barona. He's a member of the Barona Band of Mission Indians, and he's part of a fabulous new program in East County that's called Intertribal Sports. Brian, I'd like to welcome you to Tribal Beat.
Thank you.
I'm sure everyone's dying to hear, what is Intertribal Sports?
You mentioned that the program's new. I wouldn't exactly call it new. We've been around for 11 years. It's a nonprofit organization that provides no-cost sports leagues and programming, as well as resources to Native American youth and families in Southern California.
Well, how long have you been a part of it, and how is it resonating in your community?
In 2003, when I was attending San Diego State University, I was pursuing a kinesiology tract, and I wanted to be a PE teacher. So for one of my classes, I needed to go out and do some volunteering. So I volunteered to coach basketball up in Barona. So that was my first experience. And since then, I've started working in Barona in 2006 as the assistant director of the recreation department. And ever since, I have participated either as a coach and then as a board member. And now I'm the president of the board, and the organization has grown quite a bit.
How many kids are participating in this, and how many sports are they playing?
I don't have the exact number. I know it's somewhere in the neighborhood of, I want to say, close to 2,000 youth annually in the leagues, and it encompasses 22 different tribal organizations or reservations from South Riverside County down to San Diego County. So yeah, it's really from where we started, where it was just Barona, Viejas, and it was a charter school up out of the North County, and I don't know if they're still around, but it was a lot smaller back then.
Well, what sports are the kids playing? Are they just playing one sport?
Currently, we're in the midst of basketball season, which is typically our biggest turnout. We get the most kids and the most teams. Then we'll go to our spring, which this year we'll have soccer and volleyball. We do softball in the summer and flag football and soccer in the fall. So in between, we do different things, but that is the bulk of our program.
Wow, I can see that's why you have 2,000 kids. Do kids in the reservations play against each other, or do they play together?
Yeah, no, they play against each other.
So it's a competition?
Yes.
I know you're a father. I know you have three kids. How do you deal with this competition but not making it competition?
You know, we always tell the kids to have fun. I think it a lot of it falls back on the coaches and the parents. I think some coaches are a little more susceptible to the competitive side of things. And, you know, that's the way life is. Sports, I have a passion for sports. So I analyze it and I watch from the sidelines and I participate also. And every coach is different. And some care more about winning than others. Some care more about development. Some care more about having fun. And as a father, and as the leader of the organization, I do my best to ensure that having fun and participation is the number one thing. And, you know, we recently had a rule change that sort of helped to steer things more in that direction and more towards helping the kids be more focused on having fun and development, just because it seemed like there was starting to be a little too competitive and people were starting to recruit kids who maybe really shouldn't be involved in the program. They were high school varsity athletes and they were coming out and they really had no connection to the communities. And one of our goals is to unify the communities together. And when you have ringers coming in and just beating the reservation kids, it seems to create some divisiveness. So the board took steps to ensure that the teams stay a little bit more aligned with being community members, and I think that'll go a ways to sort of emphasizing the mission, which is to unify the communities. And as a board member, it was a tough step to take, but I'm proud of it.
Wow, what an interesting situation. How about the kids of the urban Indians? Do urban Indian kids, do they get to participate also?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Any child who self-identifies as Native American, so that means they don't even necessarily have to have enrollment or tribal IDs, but because we know there are people who self-identify as Native American and typically they tend to be urban, and for whatever reason, and the reasons are numerous, where Native American people get separated from their communities at some point in time, either through like the relocation programs of the 60s, and even before then when the allotments and things were happening and certain people just chose to take their money, you know, so they never really got enrolled. And so now they sort of are tribeless Indians out there. So, yeah, we definitely accept anybody who self-identifies as Native American. And as a matter of fact, there's been San Diego urban teams that have participated in intertribal sports. There's a program in San Jacinto, which is sort of urban for that neck of the woods, and all those kids come out and play too.
Wow. I know you have, I don't know if all the kids have uniforms, but I get to see some of the kids after my Science Explorers Club, they go and they change into their uniforms, and they love their uniforms, their sports uniforms. Do they all wear uniforms?
Yeah, that's, it may seem like a little thing to some people, but obviously you've noticed. In the early days of our program, there were the haves and the have-nots. So it's pretty obvious in our service area who the haves are, or it was anyways, before. The tribes that had Indian gaming had money, so they could afford to get their kids uniforms and things like that, or either through the tribes themselves or their parents. So you'd see some kids coming with new sneakers and uniforms and things of that nature. And then you'd have these other kids from these communities that were very rural and didn't have a lot of means. And they'd be wearing t-shirts and mismatched, and they just, you could tell, you know, the kids that really had it, those resources, and those that didn't. So one of the first things we did when we were able to is make sure all the kids felt good when they came to the game day by having the same uniforms as their opponents. So fortunately now we're able to provide uniforms for every team and every child who participates, so that they have that self-esteem when they walk on the court. You know, regardless of their skill or where they come from, they look just like the other team.
Wow, is that interesting. Well, where does the funding come from?
The majority of our funding is from the the tribes. So the local tribes contribute, I would say, about 60% of the annual funding to the organization. And gaming, the gaming tribes are the ones that are able to do it. So Barona, Sequan, Viejas, Pechanga, Paula, and then there's another organization, Southern California Tribal Chairman's Association. They also have some financial resources. So those are our biggest funders. And I'm proud to say Barona has given $100,000 a year for the past 5 years. So they're our biggest financial contributor.
Wow.
So I feel like I had a small part to play in making sure that happened. So I'm very proud of that.
Do you also have fundraisers? Maybe is there a place if listeners are interested in funding some of the programs, where could they get in touch with someone?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. If anyone's interested, we have a website. It's www.intertribalsports.org. And there's information on that. We also have an annual golf tournament. Those are our major fundraisers. We've done some other things, but those are the biggest ones.
Yeah, the other thing that I participate in, a couple times a year you have a picnic, which involves all the parents and the kids, and it trades off from one reservation to the next reservation to another reservation so that people get used to moving back and forth. Is that a fundraiser, or is that just a fun activity?
Yeah, that's one of our values is Native American culture. If you look at our mission statement and our values, it's been a big challenge to always incorporate that on game day. In the off season, such as during Thanksgiving break and summer vacation, we provide these youth cultural gatherings where we invite all the kids who participate in the program, and even those who do not, anyone that is within the sound of my voice or looks us up on the website and finds out about it, is welcome to come. It's geared towards the youth, and we provide a day's worth of cultural activities to emphasize the Native American culture. We provide a meal, and it's a lot of fun. My kids have gone, and it's a nice thing to do. You get to see each other, the other kids, in a non-competitive environment, and also experience a little bit of the hospitality of the host tribe on that day. And I know we've had it in Barona, in Sequan, all the way up in Los Coyotes, which is up by Warner Springs, which that was really interesting. But we've been doing them twice a year for about the last 4 years, so they're really great.
I've watched a couple really interesting parts of your program. The recreation director who has all of these life lessons coming out of his mouth whenever he's teaching. I watched basketball being taught because that's just before Science Explorers Club, and the kids are learning to throw basketballs, but in between learning to throw basketballs, they're being taught about being nice to each other and look where other people are and making sure that everyone has a chance. It's amazing that I've never worked with any sports people before, but that apparently is part of what to be a coach is to coach all the life skills as well as the skills of doing sports.
Yeah, I think any coach worth their stripes puts character development ahead of player development, and that's the challenge as a new coach, figuring that part out. You know, you think when you're growing up, well, yeah, coach just he just told me to run around and do push-ups and shoot the ball, and then as you start to coach yourself, you start to realize that you have a responsibility, that, you know, your coach wasn't just being a drill instructor, but also teaching you life lessons. So it's a tremendous opportunity to teach and help young people develop. And so Intertribal Sports has recognized that that's one avenue that we can use to teach our young people and give them those life skills.
Yeah, the other part that I watched was, it was called Intertribal Sports, but it was one of the younger members of your group that was teaching the kids out of his mouth about every fourth sentence was, and then you can use this skill in order to go to college. And then he was discuss something or other. Okay, everybody get in line and look at where everyone is next to you. Now we're going to toss this ball. And this is one of these kind of skills that you can use when you go to college. And so going to college, it seems to be one of the directions that you consider to be really important.
Yeah, I think it's important to note that even though our name is Intertribal Sports, we feel a responsibility to provide these life lessons, to give these kids a leg up. And we feel like we're really fortunate to be in that position and to have the resources to make an impact on these kids going forward. So education is also one of our values. So we do whatever we can. We have just started a scholarship program. Last year was the first year that we provided scholarships for young people. And we took applications and sifted through them and picked three qualified applicants and were able to give out, I believe it was $5,000 or $7,500 worth of scholarships to three people so they could have a little bit easier road on their way through college. And actually one of our ambassadors that we have for the organization is the NBA Hall of Famer and San Diegan Bill Walton. And he came out to our golf tournament to do a little MC duty and tell some stories and just have, you know, give a face to the organization. And when he heard about the scholarship program, he matched the funds. So every kid, whatever their scholarship was coming from ITS, was doubled due to his generosity. So yeah, these are the things that that have evolved. You know, we also emphasize wellness and nutrition. And then, you know, so it's not just the sports. You know, we feel like because we have so much time with the kids, that there's a opportunity to really not just teach sports, but also emphasize education, teach about healthy eating and wellness and things of that nature. So it's evolved over time. You know, at first it was just games, but we've become so much more these days.
What a fascinating program. Well, before we end, is there anything else that you would like to say?
You know, I just want to thank you for inviting me out and thank anyone that's listening. And if you would like to find out more or get involved somehow, just please go to our website, intertribalsports.org. And yeah, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Brian Van Wansel, for joining us today on East County Magazine's Tribal Beat.
You're welcome.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the San Diego Performance Academy for the use of their studio, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.